for the non-commutative version of DMO and H1 spaces. Non-commutative LP spaces now is already a well-known subject in the study of operator space and operator algebras. But in the classical case, if you look at the endpoint of LP spaces, that's L infinity and L1. So in many situations, the BMO and H1 is a good substitution for L infinity and L1. So Howard just want to talk about a non-commutative analog of this BMO H1. When we see H1 and Hardy space H1 and BMO in the classical case, there are analytic version of it and also the real version of it. That's H1 space and BMO space from the real analysis. So the analytic version of this H1 BMO already have non-commutative analog by Arveson. So that's considered sub-Dalgoorlog non algebra. So here we are going to talk about the real version of H1 and BMO spaces. Also, there are Martingale version of H1 BMO spaces. There are already non-commutative analog of it. That's due by BZ and Xu. Let me first give a brief review of this H1 BMO spaces. So what's a BMO spaces? That's what you consider. Is this clear enough, or do we turn off some light? So this BMO spaces, that bounded mean oscillation space, this was introduced by John and Nirenberg when they study PDEs. So the reason is that you look at a locally integrable function phi on the real line, we denote phi I, which is mean value on an integral I. Then the BMO norm of phi is just phi minus the mean value of phi minus phi I, the absolute value of phi minus phi I. So this bounded we call this function is with a bounded mean oscillation. We can see the difference is that if this function phi itself is bounded in BMO, so they are not the same. In fact, there are some unbounded function which is in BMO, not of X. A lot of property of this BMO is that the delta power is not really important. Any power p for p between 0 and infinity. That's what John Nirenberg in the body. One importance of this BMO is its collection between the Carlson layer. If you consider a function phi which is in BMO, now you consider it commonly the extension of this phi. That's just the quantum integral of phi defined in the following way. That's a convolution of this phi with this kernel. Now, if you consider phi in BMO, consider the mirror defined in this way. That's a gradient of the commonly extension of this phi on single square. And type y, dx dy. This will be a Carlson layer on the in the upper half plane. And these two norms will be the same. So by Carlson layer, so many people mean a layer is a Carlson layer. It means that the infra with respect to this layer in this box, this I, and length there for I. This is always smaller than the length of I. So that's a an integral on this square is smaller than the length of the edge. This side is equivalent. This is one importance of this BMO. Also, BMO is closely related to other important subjects, singular integrals and pair products. One property we will talk about is that this BMO is a dual of a lot of classical space, which is called Hardy space H1. This is used by Stein and Kleberman. So what is Hardy space H1? that said, I will just record the condition of a real hardening space. So the definition of a hardening space, H1, that's just one characterization by the maximum function. To give you a function f on the real line, you consider its harmonic extension py. So py is defined in this way. That's a Poisson integral. Now you consider the LP norm of the maximum function of PYF. So that's a super Y. You consider this norm, this is the definition of Hardy space ADP. This is the most popular way to define Hardy spaces in the real analysis. But there is another characterization that's by this square function, little bit penny tree function. So the HP norm of F is just the same as the LP norm of this square t function. So what's this t function? That's just the integral from 0 to infinity, and you look at the integral of the square of the gradient of t1. The gradient is d by dx, d by dy. Well, this definition is more complex than the maximum function definition. So of course there should be some advantage. So one advantage is that you can consider the Hardy spaces in a more general case by using this definition. Another advantage is that this is useful to treat singular integrals. For instance, if you consider the curve of the transform on the real line, then we can say that the square of the gradient of Py will be invariant under this curve of the transform. Then, from the well-known result, the HP norm is equivalent to the LP norm for P between 1 and infinity, when you get the bounded list of separate transform on LP for P between 1 to infinity. This gives you some idea why this is useful to treat singular integrals. Okay.
Why this BMO H1 is seen as the end point of LP?
So if you play the finger in four, you feel low, it's on found it on your low, and it's one way you get it found it on LP automatically. Well, this is also related to other subjects. The most of our subjects I don't talk.
Okay, as I said, there are analytic version of this H1 BMO, but this is not the subject we are talking. Also, there are marking view, there are definition for hard spaces and H1 for marking views, and both of them have already non-commutative analog. So for the non-commutative generation of hard spaces for marking views, this has been done by Bizi and Xu, and then Jung, Xu, Mozart. So this considered non-commutative marking views for this H1 BMO. And for the analytic H1 BMO, this considered by Arveson and many others, they consider sub-diagonal from Neumann algebra. And recently, this have some good progress by Fleischer, Lamsami, and Xu Bestian. But what we are talking about in this talk is the analog of the definition I gave just now. That's a real hard space H1 and BMO. So that's different from their method. Okay, let me give some notation first, and then I can give the position of the non-commutative analog of H1 and BMO. Because this real method of H1 BMO, we use this Poisson integral. So we first introduce some notation for semigroup of operators. So let M be a semi-finite from Neumann algebra. Then we denote LPM in the non-commutative LP spaces. We consider a semigroup of operators CY with LP spaces. In fact, there are many examples of them. We assume we have some normal assumptions. So each QI is a contraction. And when the QI is symmetric, it is not so crucial, but for converging, we ask them self-joint on this L2. On L2 space, there are self-joint. QI1 is 1, so identity is 1. And also it has this continuous condition that QYF tends to F in L2 or the Y tends to 0. We can see that 1 plus 3 gives that QY is a positive operator. In fact, because I assume this is a contraction on L infinity M also, so on our sister algebra it is a contraction, and QY is 1, then this is a positive.
Classical example of this this semigroup is one of them is a Heath semigroup. That's if you consider the Laplacian operator. That's on the real line. That's just the double derivative with respect to x. Then if you consider e to the power y times this Laplacian, okay, y is a number between 0 and infinity, you get a semigroup, the classical Heath semigroup. In fact, this classical Heath semigroup can be given in another way. That it's a convolution operator with a curl given in this way. It's the density of the strong emulsion. Another example of the semigroup I consider there is a classical Poisson semigroup that you consider Laplacian, but v to the power less than y, square root of negative theta. This is also given by a convolution operator in this way. But in fact, there are some nice properties of this Heath group and semigroup. We see that Heath group time of y to a power is increasing, and the Poisson semigroup divided by a power by 1. Which one? if there's only one. This data is, in fact, eigenvalue is negative here. And in fact, you see this Poisson semigroup is defined in a very close connection to this Hopkins group. So generally, we can replace this data by some unbounded orbit on L2. And this is E2YL, we can see that this is E2 negative Y square root of negative L. So we know generally, we call such kind of not just for non-Martian, we consider this kind of PY, we call it subordinated semigroup to this PY. So that's a definition generally which we will need. Okay, so that's generally we call this is a subordinated Poisson semigroup. But if this semigroup PY is given in the following way, that E2YL, so that's just replaced delta by L, then we call this kind of a semigroup, we call it a subordinated Poisson semigroup with this respect to PY. You said this PY is chosen to satisfy this this differential equation, d by dy plus alpha L to py is 0. And this py also has this nice property that py divided by y is decreasing for every subordinated Poisson function. Because of this functional calculus, this py is given in this way, and py divided by y is given in this way. Now this function will be decreased with respect to y, and tu is a positive operator. So we see this py divided by y decreasing as a positive operator. Okay, so that's a frame we will work on. So now let me give the definition of our BMO spacing in the two computer.
So the BMO spaces we will consider is just you consider a general subordinated Poisson semigroup. That's I'm just giving you that way with why is it some positive semigroup. PY is subordinated to PY. Now we define BMO norm in the following way. The PY on this phi minus PY square will one up our infinity norm. So here PY is based the role of mean value in the last one. That is the mean value, phi minus the mean value. Now we have your PY. If this PY is a classical Poisson integral, then it is equivalent to the classical calculation. And we found this this is with BMO. With Jung, we proved there is a relation of, there is a analog of the relation of BMO and quantum error. So this BMO is equivalent to this form. This form was considered a characteristic of quantum error.
The job is to find H1, which is the preview of this BMO. So the definition we will use is a non-commutative of analog of the function defined on the quorn, okay, in the classical case. So the quorn makes it difficult. So without the quorn, there is already some analog of this H1 space space. Time by time, and then in the non-commutative case by Jung, C, and the metric. That's you can consider this equal to any function because this function depends on the geometry structure. Then you can define in the same way, but replace the classical PY by the general subordinated PY. Then this function, you define its LP norm by as HP norm, then in the classical case, this proved by time that LP norm is equivalent to this HP norm, and in the non-commutative case, with some HEV
limited condition, which goes by the multi Xu and Yong. That's this equivalent to the locomotive LP norm. But when you want to consider H1, this one is not enough, because in the classical proof, they always consider this integral in the core and then can use Cartesian error and pass through to BMO spaces. So we have to consider some core structure. So how is the non-commutative error of the square function defined on the core? So we consider the following one.
So a little different from this one, that we consider this square function.
That
everything is the same, except we add a QY square function. So QY is subordinated to this QY, but we add a QY square function. This QY square plays the role of the integral form. Why is that? So we look at the classical case. So let me explain why the QY square function plays the role of the form. So we can look at the integral function on the form, some x. Is equal this sum x, you can read it as there's an infinity, but for every white space, that's just the integral on the integral. C minus x is one of y. So you can consider this guy, this integral, as a convolution of the parent first function, one over y next to y to y, on this function f. So now, let's look at the classical. Critical, because here we just consider a non-commutative element. So that's but if we replace that this convolution operator by the Hilbert group, the color is given in this way. You see this Hilbert group color has this nice property that for x between you don't have a y square. Because I have index y square here, so then there you do have y square. Well, so this is the kind of the ty square. Okay, that's you see when x is between y to y, this is just a constant, so this behavior of 1 over y. So this is for x between negative y to y, this is similarly to a characteristic function. Divided by 1. And for this square function, we have some nice property. So, in fact, if you consider some QY, which is the convolution operator, and the property that for S between the QY to Y, its behavior is dominated 1 over Y, and it decreases very fast. So this can be seen on the good core, integral on the good core. So, that's in the classical case. In fact, each operator sets by this property. In the classical case, these two norms will be the same. So we just use this observation, we replace it by QY square. And the result we can get, well, we need this some assumption for this QY. You couldn't imagine this duality true for any sample group. So we need some additional assumption for this QY. Well, generally this in the classical that's assumption on the kernel, but in the non-commutative case we have this assumption. We see this ty is cosine decreasing if this ty is divided by y to some power alpha, this is decreasing in the following sense, that for every positive element in the polynomial algebra F, this ty over yf is smaller than ty over yf for y2 bigger than y1. And we see this ty is cosine increasing if y2 alpha times ty is increasing in the in the sense of positive operator. That for every positive f, this y2 power alpha ty is bigger than y2 power of ty on this f. Okay. Because ty is cosine monotone, if ty satisfies either this condition or this condition. Okay, we already seen that the classical Hilbert group and Poisson-Sainte group satisfy this condition, and in general, all the subordinated Poisson-Sainte groups satisfy this condition because my previous slides. Okay, so under this condition, we
written away from this
QFT quality. That's any CY which is a cosine monotone in the pure space of this H1. That's the unity inequality curl. That's tau F5 for identification. Well, this direction in the class case, that's the technical, more technical part. The other direction is easier. I mean, in fact, once you have this direction, you have more many applications. But for the completion of the theory, it's natural to us for the other relation. With this, the U of H is in this BMO.
So, but for that, in the classical case, it's normally quite easy, but in my case, I have to have a lot of assumption for this H1. So the inverse relation for this one, we have the dual of H1 in this BMO. The dual is the E, this TY satisfies the following assumption. That's a TY on this horrible guy, this one half of this TY. HYA is smaller than HL1 norm and PHL1 norm. So every AB is a positive element in the L1 of N. Then we have this relation. In the classical case, this condition can be verified for any convolution operator with a kernel which decreases very fast. Then this is satisfied. In particular, for the classical heat semigroup, it satisfies this condition. Then we recover the classical Fifferman Stein's H1 BMO duality theory if we let this QI be the classical heat semigroup. But in the non-commutative case, this condition we haven't found a way to verify this condition. This depends on the decrease of the kernel, but in the non-commutative case, we don't have a good way to verify. So that's unfortunate. Let me use 2 minutes to explain this condition. How strong is it? Of course, you try to weaken this condition.
My next slide says this condition is almost necessary. What we mean almost?
In the classical case, when you consider this H1 BMO duality, in fact, for this direction, you normally put this H1 BMO in larger space than you look at it.
So, how if we put it in a larger space? So that's the related tensor space. If we define this is some kind of H1 space, but for larger set. So F1 may not be a function, may not come from DPY, DYF. It's some FY we define in this way. That's a larger space than H1. This is a larger space than BMO because we have this BMO related to constant error. So this is a good larger space.
If we want the duality between these two larger space, then this condition is necessary.
So that's why we call them almost necessary. In fact, if we have this cosine monotone condition, then the duality is true if and only if this condition is true.
For cosine monotone TY, this condition
holds if and only if the duality between this Q1 and Q infinity. So that's why we call it almost necessary.
Thank you very much.